G'day guys and girls, and welcome to another episode of the Scouting Australia podcast, powered by Australian Property Scout Buyers Agency. I'm your host, Sammy Gordon, and I'm joined once again back in the studio, up from chilly old Melbourne. It's Mr. Jimmy Ibrahim, the silver dog himself, mate.
Yes,
how are you?
Yes, I'm very good, Mr. Bull Shark.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm sunny, mate. A bit of a tan going on.
It's well, good. It's always sunny up here in the GC.
It is, mate. It's good.
Are you slipping into the GC lifestyle? Like, are you really embracing it? Because I know you're the boy from the Gong.
The Gong.
Well, you're really from the Southern Highlands.
Southern Highlands, bro. I don't know why you say this. Why is Southern Highlands Kiwi?
Don't know.
Actually, my grandfather's married, so maybe that's why. There we go.
But you're fitting into the GC.
Yeah, mate. It's good. Yeah? It's good. Mate, I'm going to jump straight into it. I've got
get,
a topic.
Get into it.
Oh, mate, I love this topic. I'm excited about this deal type. I've got a fair few of them in my portfolio. I know we built this as a staple for you in your portfolio when you came to Australian Property Scout and got started with us with the buyer's agency, because your big thing was income replacement.
Needed to.
So obviously today we're talking manufactured cash flow deals.
Cha-ching.
Cha-ching.
This is all about the cash. Now, the reason why
it's that was so ugly, bro. You're the worst.
The reason why it's so important. This is what, when people talk about lifestyle and they talk about passive income and they talk about financial freedom.
Yes.
These are the jewels in your crown, aren't they? These are the ones that are going to give you that to do whatever you want.
Yes.
The cash. This is all about the cash flow. So I'm super pumped, because I know we did the bread and butter deals previously. Obviously, we spoke about growth. We spoke about the foundations of your properties and how to build out your portfolio. But these ones really are all about how do you create that cash flow?
Yes. It's
and
very
balance
true.
Balance out those growth properties, those bread and butter deals.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note, like we spoke about last time, is your bread and butters are crucial for building the foundations and really, really building out that initial portfolio. They're very, very powerful deals in that sense. But your cash flow deals are going to help you with serviceability, and they're also going to be able to help you. Well, it's not even helping you. It's that long term. You know, we gave that example of, do you want a 500 grand property yielding 4 or 5%? Or do you want a 500 grand property yielding, you know, 8, 7, 8, 9% sort of yields? I know which one I'd be choosing for the back end to sell one to hold the other. You want Amen. Those high cash flow deals.
Amen. I mean, think about it. In dollar terms, like, let's just say, if you're going to pay down 500 grand, would you rather have 800 bucks a week coming in or 500? I mean, it's pretty simple, right, folks?
Wow.
Pretty simple.
I know which one I'd prefer, Jimmy.
I know which one I'd prefer. And then a really important point too is for people to understand at the end, if you have high yielding properties, per property earning more income, you need to hold on to less properties. You don't need to hold on 100%. To as many.
Yes. So a lot of people, man, they always used to talk about the idea of, like, you know, you buy 10 properties over 10 years, and then when they double, you sell off half to own the other half outright, right? It was just a very general blasé sort of statement around how to retire from property. But the issue is, if you've got a $400,000 or $500,000 property yielding 5%, the net cash flows on that deal are so low because they're just a standard residential property without additional sort of income streams on the one asset. So it's such a low net yielding property for that sort of thing. And this is where I kind of, you know, the strategy sort of the formulate of, like, why would you go down that? You really want to be owning the other half. You want them to be higher than average yielding. So let's say you had five, you know, in that scenario, they're all giving you 15 grand a year. You got five of them, that's only 75 grand. But if you got four giving you 25, your four giving you 25 is getting you to bloody, you know, 100 grand. If you had three of them, you'd be at your 75. But you're exactly right, mate. Less properties to get more cash flow is ideal, mate. It is the perfect scenario.
And I believe you've got a whole bunch of different strategies that you want to run through people about what they could possibly do with the manufactured cash flow.
100%. Man, I just want to punch through, like, the basics in terms of, like, what I think are great options for people out there, that it's available to the everyday investor. If you can get out there and you can find these deals at the right money. You know, sometimes you might be forcing values with renovations or small builds or builds or different things like that. These are some different strategies you can put in the portfolio without going too crazy. You know, and obviously what we help our clients with at Australian Property Scout as well.
When you're going to go through these, just for people, just to preempt people listening to this, do they need to think about these as to, like, do you need to have a broad spectrum of a few different ones? Or can you, if you find one that really works for you, do you just double down and just focus on that particular strategy? Or would you look at to layer multiple ones? I just want people to start thinking about as they're listening.
I think it really depends. There's nothing wrong with having a mix, but I think it depends how many they want. So if someone just wants, like we gave that scenario before, you know, the five low yielding ones compared to the three high yielding ones. If all you wanted was 75K per annum net passive, I probably would just do three deals of the exact same deal type so you can nail it and you just have those in there. Mm. If you're wanting $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, start talking these big numbers, you probably want a bit of diversification both in location and in deal type to spread your risk a bit. And that's fair something enough. I really want to kind of touch on today as well.
All right, let's dive in.
Beautiful. Mate, number one for me is duplexes. So duplexes is a really interesting one to kind of talk about because there's two layers of duplexes. Mm-hmm. There's existing duplexes and there's brand new duplexes. Mm-hmm. Now, I've always found your higher net yielding duplexes are your existing ones that you can go and buy. You can go buy them at a discount and then you can go extensively renovate them. We do this quite often for clients and we're typically, even still in today's environment where there's a lot of yield compression around, typically with these sorts of deals, we're still yielding 8% plus sort of yields, depending on location, depending on condition.
Mm. I was just going to say, when you say duplex, just to make it very clear for everyone, okay.
100%.
You're talking about two houses on the one property.
Yep.
Are they individually titled? Are they on the one title? So for people, just to get people really super clear on this.
So this is where it can come down to, and obviously the story we did a while ago in terms of myself, that deal that I did from the unit block side of things where you could individually title them. A lot of the time you're buying these on single title, but they've got the option to individually title. But it really depends what they're in your portfolio for. Okay. So if they're in your portfolio for cash flow, like we're talking about here, you might keep them on one title to have a lower set of council rates, lower insurances and whatnot, because you can kind of group them together. But if equity extraction is a big part, is a big play to you and it's very important, then you can, a lot of the time, individually title these things and strip the equity
out. Got it. So one house, duplex, two different rental leases, agreements in place. We're getting maximum rent for the one title.
Sometimes we've bought these before as well where you can buy the duplex site and it might be on like a big corner block. And at the time, and sometimes it's a future play where maybe at the time the zoning doesn't allow you to chop that block, but you know it's quite a big block. You've already got the dual lock on there, so you're not going to be able to build a secondary dwelling, but it's kind of in the portfolio for further down the track and you might be able to subdivide it. So different little things like that. And I think the listeners will know that you and I love to layer strategies on top of each other. Things like that of a long-term, you know, play where you might be able to chop a block off or whatever, they can be great options as well. But yeah, I think these in the portfolio, they can be really, really good, strong investments and properties in the portfolio.
So the existing duplex, you said, is probably what you like.
Yeah, and to give it a bit of context as well, guys, like kind of imagine or think about maybe like your typical apartment that's somewhere and you might have a two or a three bedder and you might have one bathroom and, you know, a lot of the time you block construction, so you'd be kind of concrete block construction, which is perfect. I like those because a lot of the time when they're built with that, same as my unit blocks that I built, that I bought, a lot of the time those internal walls are also concrete block because it's a really cheap construction method for them, but it's great because it means tenants can't go punching holes in walls or whatever. It's really strong. And if you ever need to repaint it, you give it a clean, you literally paint over the top and bang, it's done.
Okay.
So it can be a really good product, but you kind of think of like that apartment that you probably know or can think of an apartment you've been in that's maybe a two or a three bedder with one bath. A lot of the time it's, think of two of those stacked right next to each other with a common wall. That's a duplex.
So the pros and cons of these, just as a high level, what would you say is...
The pros really are typically, as long as you buy it well in your right location, you're not buying at the end of a cycle and getting an average yield from it. But let's say you're buying in early in an area and you're getting a good yield and everything on the top. You know, your advantages are you still a lot of the time can ride in with quite good growth on them.
Okay.
You have the ability a lot of the time to be able to individually title them, whether it's community or strata title them. One of my favorite strategies is forcing value via renovations. So you can renovate to drive a higher return on it as well. So you might buy one at 7.5, but you can put 20 grand into it, 10 each side, and then you can turn it into a 9% yielder or maybe an 8.5-9% yielder off the back of that as well. Mm. You know, you've got your future different sort of plays on it too. The only slight thing that can be pros and cons. Cons on them, if you buy an old shit one, be wary that you've got two sets of everything on it in terms of, you know, two stoves, two ovens, two stoves, two cooktops, two aircon units, two dishwashers, you've got dishwashers in it. You've got two sets of sort of everything. And if it's an older block, just be wary that those sorts of things, you know, might cark it sometime in the not too distant future. So just factor that into your numbers.
Okay. Got it. I think duplex, we've nailed that.
Well, if you flip to the other side of as well in terms of developing duplexes on the other side as well, just to be transparent, guys, a lot of the time it's actually quite hard to get them to be really strong cash flow plays. So a lot of the time they might be more of an equity play. than to be a really a cash flow play. Because a lot of the time, it doesn't really make sense to develop them in the bottom end of the market. And the bottom end of the market is where a lot of time you can get your higher yields. But if you're doing it more in a sort of a top end of the market and you're putting a lot of capital into it, a lot of the time your yields won't be all that impressive, but they can be good from a from a development perspective.
But essentially, you're saying just because of the capital intensity of them in those lower markets, it's just not worth it. From the yield perspective, it's not going to deliver the result you want. Is that what you're saying?
You mean on the big ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, the big ones, a lot of the time, yeah, you can't get that yield perspective out of it. Without leaving a lot of cash in the deal, which I'm the biggest fan of.
No, you don't want to put too much cash in, do you?
That's it.
Okay. I think we've nailed duplex. Anything else on that one?
Mate, I'm happy with duplexes. Much.
Yeah, tick.
The one good thing about it, the one thing to really take note with this, guys, if you're looking to do it yourself or if you want to employ our services and work with us on it, is you want to make sure you're buying in the right location. So location is always a huge precursor. And you'll find with all these deals we do, when they're in their residential space, you want to be making sure you're timing the right markets. Because if you time the right markets, there's two things here. You're going to catch an upcycle in terms of growth. You'll probably also catch an upcycle in terms of rents, but your property will be directly exposed to that. And a lot of the time, like that is where you get the great return off the back of that as well, and you'll keep winning. If you're buying at the top end of a market, like you're not going to be getting as good a yield, your growth isn't going to be coming through, you're going to kind of be hampered on that side. So something we really make sure we do is we're still all the areas where we're doing cash flow deals, a lot of times the same areas where we're doing our capital growth praise, our bread and 100%. Butters. Because you're going to get the best of both worlds from it. You just may not make as much of a discount on the way in on something like a cash flow deal.
Is it fair to say that the duplexes are just not as common or popular? You don't see as many duplexes, wouldn't you say?
Oh, they're a lot more rare.
Yeah.
So usually duplexes and we're about to run into unit blocks. They're definitely a lot more rare to be able to pick them up for good money.
Okay.
Beautiful. Well done. So number two.
Tick.
Unit number blocks. One. Done. All right. Tick. Boop. Duplex is done. Unit blocks up next.
You have done a unit block back in one of our other podcasts.
100%. Right? 100%, man.
Four pack.
I'm a four pack.
Well, you've never really had a six pack.
I've always had an eight pack, so I doubled down. You kind of divided and went the other way. You just got a keg. You got a one pack. This is a big keg, they call it. He was walking down the mount, in the main street in the mount. And they go, "Oi, take the keg back to the pub, mate. What are you doing?" Anyway. What are you laughing at, you goose? Anyway, so four pack is what I've bought before. In other episodes, we'll run through having done other unit blocks and different deals that have been done as well within the portfolio. But unit blocks are a great style of deal, especially in terms of cash flow. You have to be very careful though, especially in the current market. There's been a lot of yield compression. People get caught up on the numbers. A unit block looks good. It's an older block, but I can see it's got 7-8% yield. The issue with it is going to be the maintenance. If it's an older block, you have to be very aware of the maintenance side of things with them. So I always like to factor in a bit of a bigger budget. Unless this thing's been renovated at some point and you go, all right, because let's talk about a four pack. Like we were saying before, you've got, sorry, I was thinking about the keg before. This is making me laugh. You think about it. You've got your four aircon units, hot water systems, cooktops, range hood, oven. If it's got dishwashers, you've got four of these things on each property. So unless one of my favorite things to do, and this is what I did on that first one, was you buy ones at a bit of a discount and you know half of the things are fixed and I'm just factoring into my numbers that I've got to replace these other things and I keep a little maintenance buffer to the side, knowing they're probably going to break down in the next couple of years. I've actually had a pretty good run with it, but these things do go from time to time as well. So it's good to have a nice little maintenance buffer on the side of it. But that being said, other than that side of things, because that's the prime con, and it's the same as the con for the duplexes.
Yes.
But other than that, as long as that's factored into your numbers and it's taking care of itself from that side, they can be fantastic investments because, you know, you could have – your turnaround on them typically is quite quick because they're a lower-priced product and people – you can get people in them a lot of the time a lot quicker, especially if they present well. But, you know, let's say you have a little bit of downtime and you have to renovate one of the units, you've still got 75% of your income coming in if you've got a four-pack.
That's true.
And one of them has to be renovated or whatever. So I was saying I always really liked that style of it and having that access as well. So, look, I'm a really big fan of your duplexes, for two, your three and your four-pack unit blocks. The reason being is because you can typically still stay within residential funding for a three and a four-pack. Once you go to five, you have to go to commercial. Okay. So almost always, once you get to five, half of lenders even look at four-packs and they go to commercial. I did mine with Resi, but when you go to five and above, you're almost always in that commercial sector, which you just have to factor into your numbers. Mm. So as long as your numbers work, but just you know, when you go commercial, guys, a lot of time you're going to be adding, you know, a percentage point on in terms of your interest rate, which is obviously going to bring down your net yield on that property as well.
So when you're talking about these particular deals, and for our listeners out there,
yes, Jimmy,
these two deals that you mentioned, first of all, they, especially with the Uniblock of 4 or 6, or it's fair to say this probably is a little bit more advanced, or is a little bit more like you need to have a bigger budget. You need to make sure that you know what you're doing with your numbers. So this wouldn't be for most people, because I'm just thinking people are listening to this thinking, okay, I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
Be a bit self-aware that you don't need to pull the trigger on this one early, right? Would you say for new investors or people that are looking for that cash flow, you would focus on this?
So in the next app, we're going to be doing the strategy, right? So we wanted to break down bread and butters, and we wanted to break down cash flow deals, manufactured cash flow deals. In the next step, we're going to be running through strategy.
Nice.
There's a reason why I would not be jumping into any of these deals to start with. Even if the first potentially two or three, I would prefer to not put any of my guys into this early because they are capital intensive.
Nice.
Now, majority of the time, they're quite capital intensive. Your best deals are going to be the ones you can force value on and renovate and get an, and that's what I'm going to run through, like the pros of a unit block as well. A lot of the time, you can layer different strategies on top of it. So obviously you're trying to get a discount, you're buying in the right location, but a lot of time you might be trying to force value with renovations and whatnot as well. But then you've also got obviously your individual titling that you can go through and whatnot too. So those different strategies and layering those different strategies on top can really kind of give you a really, really solid return on that thing before it's even done anything with the market. So that's why I really like them, but they're capital intensive.
Okay.
You know, a lot of the time you're going to need a big chunk, and you know, the times of like my deal in the Mount, like that sort of stuff. So we had to get such a strong return to be able to pull it out in that sense. They're quite hard to find deals like that these days and be able to put them together.
All right. Well, it's good for people to know in the back of their mind, this is possible. So let's keep moving through. So any more on that one?
The only other thing I'll throw in is when it comes to unit blocks and duplexes, really, really run your numbers, guys. One big thing people get wrong is a lot of the time people go buy a unit block and they think, oh yeah, I just got to pay one set of council rates and I've got 4 or 5 rents coming in, or I've got this or I've got that or whatever. Be very, very sure of your numbers when it comes to unit blocks. Because I know, like in recent years, unit blocks with great yields have become more and more scarce. There's a reason why for me, I was never really touching unit blocks that had like sub 9% yields, because there are a lot of additional sort of expenses and whatnot with them, you know, and like, you know, you got your multiple sets of rates and your multiple sets of everything. And yes, they are typically a little bit less unless they're individually titled, but yes, they're a little bit less, but just don't be naive with it and think, oh, well, a house rates in that area are $2,000 a week. Oh, sorry, fuck, kill you, destroy you, $2,000 a year. Obviously, they're not going to be, you know, comparable to that. But don't get sucked in and thinking, oh, well, that's all that is. And a Uniblock's just got the same land content, so it must be the same. I've seen that happen so many times. And in the wrong area, the wrong unit block can be $2,000 a unit. And all of a sudden, you think you're in front and you're getting absolutely smashed.
Is that even if it isn't individually titled?
Yeah. It depends on the council.
Wow.
It depends on the council.
That's a bit of a cash grab, isn't
it? Definitely. Definitely.
That's insane.
So different states are more lenient with different things. I've always been a big fan of South Australia and WA with the way that they run in terms of you know, council rates and whatnot. They're quite lenient. Even New South Wales has been pretty good for a while. I've got a little bit of a bone to pick when it comes to Queensland a lot of the time too. They do try and smack you at every turn you can get. Your council rates are expensive.
They change the goalposts pretty frequently, don't they?
They're continually going for those sort of money grabs, you know, and whatnot too. So it's just something to be mindful of and wary within those as well. Don't overcapitalize on them. Like, And be very sure of your numbers. That's the biggest thing. Have we done a pod yet on knowing your numbers?
Well, we have emphasized it a lot on a lot of the other podcasts.
I think we should do one. Yeah,
It is really important. And actually, a good podcast would be, what specific numbers do you need to focus on?
Yeah.
Because people get a bit overwhelmed and there's a lot of numbers.
Maybe run everyone through a cash flow sheet of different deals.
Absolutely. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. A good case study. What do you reckon, Mr. Producer?
Beautiful.
Thumbs up.
Done. It's coming.
So
it's coming.
Two down. I think, you know, complexes, apartments with
duplexes and unit blocks.
Done it?
Yes.
Number three, what do you got?
I only had two.
Is that it? All right. Well, it's been a great episode.
All right, guys. Number three is definitely one of my favorites. Oh, actually, I'll save that for number four. Number three, we're going to swap it, is renovating for yield. It's one of my favorite ones because there's different little things you can do adding bedrooms, you know, converting additional living spaces into bedrooms, adding en suites.
Yes.
Obviously, having the right team and being able to execute on these strategies is crucial. But when you can knock those things over, or if you can do things like this yourself and, you, and you're handy and you're trying to force value around this sort of way, you can get so much additional value. And especially from a yield perspective as well, a lot of the time you can just add so much. And this can also apply, guys, to your bread and butter style deal. So I've done this myself with bread and butters in my portfolio that I want to give a nice, like a cash flow injection to, but also a value boost to when you do your renovating for yield and renovating for value adds as well. Might even run through a bit of a case, you know, a segment on this one time where we actually dissect these in maybe in a little bit more detail. But you said you got one of the deals we did you want to share, right?
Yeah, actually, because
the man who never wanted to buy a bread and butter.
The reason we actually argued about this particular deal because you're like, Jimmy, you have to buy a bread and butter deal. It's like, nah, dude, let's just keep buying these manufactured cash flow deals.
Nah.
But this particular deal.
Well, when did you buy this one?
This was in
mid last year.
Early last year, maybe? Yeah, what didn't it? Anyway, 2022. So we bought it in WA.
Yep.
When it was presented to me, we obviously had a good price on the way in, but it was a 3-bed, 2-bath, but the front lounge room could be converted to another bedroom, which would not only obviously give you a dramatic uplift in the rent, but it's obviously going to give you, it's in a different category now, it's a 4-bed, 2-bath. So to me, it was a no-brainer, but I didn't realize the uplift. I thought, okay, we're going to get a little bit, you know, and for $5,000, it costs to do the reno.
Yeah,
so I remember, we bought this property for $375,000. It's probably valued over, I mean, it was already under market, low fours.
It was excellent suburb, excellent location. Like, yeah, it was very, very good. That was easy work.
Good buy.
Low fours, yeah.
It was rented for $390,000 at the time.
Yep.
Then by spending $5,000 to convert the front lounge room, the rent now is at $480,000.
Yeah.
And that's before now. I think the market's actually going to, I could go up another.
You definitely get over 500 for that now.
So just that little $5,000 changed it from a probably 5.4%, I think the yield was, now to a 6.6.
Yeah, at least. And the value of that, like when you bought it, you probably were making 35 on the way into a deal, right? $375,000 deal was probably worth 410, but putting the extra bedroom in there, you're probably throwing an extra 20-30K on top. So like, you know, for a $5,000 addition, you're probably actually $50,000 below market when we execute that deal with the small addition. And then obviously buying in the right location, that property now would be worth, that probably would be pretty close to $500,000 in terms of value.
It is incredible. And I think for people listening out there, doing the lease, like you can get such a massive uplift from doing very minimal work. You don't think renovation has to be so complex.
No.
Because you can get daunted thinking, oh, I can't be stuffed. I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I didn't do the work. I didn't lift a finger.
Yeah.
But the point is looking for that low-lying fruit,
yes.
thinking how can I squeeze every bit of value to get high yield or higher uplift? This is a perfect example.
100%, man.
Clean, easy, no-brainer.
Definitely. And this is the thing, man. It can be as complex or as simple as someone is risk appetite is, right? Because you know this for well, that's probably the most simple one you've done compared to all the shit we've done before it. Because we obviously leverage quite hard into doing layering different strategies to get the highest and best use. But like this is something like that would be perfect for a beginner investor wanting a yield boost and an equity boost as well. Something simple like that and obviously finding the value in those styles of deals is going to be where you really win on that front as well.
And can we also say some people don't want, they would just want an end product and that's fine. Like some people don't want to do renovation.
Yeah.
But if you're looking to really maximize your yield, then you really need to start getting your mindset around embracing it.
Yes.
And you know, I know you love buying the worst possible property because you know that there's a massive upside, right? In terms of the uplift.
Yeah.
Because there's so much value you can bring in. You're not trying to buy something that looks great now. You want to convert it to that.
Normally I buy those ones because all the clients reject them. I'm like, I can't pass it. I better buy this thing. Another one.
But I too, through your coaching, I love these kind of deals too because that's where I see the massive upside.
100%.
And getting it faster than just waiting. So you're buying that really nice property. Obviously, what can you do? You can't renovate, you can't improve the value or the yield. So these kind of deals, you really want to embrace them, especially if you want to improve yield.
Couldn't agree more, mate. Couldn't agree more.
Done.
Number four, secondary dwellings, granny flats.
We love these.
It was a craze like, you know, 10 or so years ago in Sydney, people were really getting amongst it. 5-10 years ago, it was going crazy. And then there was a bit of like, there was a glut because they did too many of these in Sydney in certain pockets, especially like Western Sydney, like your Campbelltowns, your Blacktowns, your Liverpools. They just smashed them and they were everywhere. Caused a massive oversupply and a big glut. It's one of the big things I check when we're kind of going to an area, if this is a sort of strategy that we're going to execute, is there an oversupply, or is there a demand short? You know, is there a demand for this product in the area? And if the answer is like an overwhelming yes, and if the vacancy rates are super tight in an area, then this is an excellent strategy to execute. The simple fact for it, guys, is you on one set of on one title, and this is the example I was giving earlier about the unit blocks and duplexes, where you have to be careful. Where if you buy into an area that's got extremely high rates, and the council's just doing a cash grab, and I've seen this so much, especially in Queensland and regional New South Wales, it happens a lot. You know, your house is $2,500 a year in rates, but then they smack you for each unit is $2,500 a year. You got six pack, you got 15 grand worth of rates on that thing. And I'm not kidding, I've seen that before. What I love about the secondary dwellings and the granny flats is you keep it all on one title. There is no second title, and there is no ability a lot of the time to put it on a second title, but that's not why we're buying it. And a lot of the time people say to me, oh, isn't it better to subdivide it or to strata it or whatever? And it's like, from a value perspective, potentially a little bit, but we're not buying this for that. This is in there because we need to boost your serviceability, or this is in there for that next property that you need, you know, the next iron in the fire for you for this your dual asset portfolio.
Yes.
And you've got this next cash flow deal that you need in the mix, or you might have three bread and butters and this is coming in there to fully service the whole thing. Don't overthink it. If we're putting a deal, especially from that side in front of you, that's what it ticks the boxes for. Mm. And that's going to give you the highest and best use from that deal at the time.
Got it.
And that's what you really want to accumulate. And they're great deals, man. Like you know full well from experience, especially this is where, guys, as well, if you're layering multiple strategies, like buying in the right location, buying at a discount, renovating to add some value, building out the back at a very good price as well. If you're layering all these different strategies on top, buying in early in the market so the yield's still strong as it is, when you layer all this stuff on top, you can get an exceptional result. And especially like even at first, a lot of the time, your deal might come out, and Jimmy's about to give us an example, but your deal might come out like 7.5-8% yield. A lot of time in the last year or two, a lot of those 7.5-8% yields, there's been so much rental growth that now they're sitting at 10-12% yields on what they paid for it, plus hectic depreciation. And if I throw on that, one sec, Jimmy, if I throw on that the fact that when you buy the house, you do a bit of a cosmetic reno most of the time, you're giving it a facelift, so you're lowering your maintenance side of things, but then you're building brand new at the back. So like you're buying a unit block or a duplex that's got multiple different things can break down and go wrong, it does, but you're building brand new. So you are the one getting that product. And a lot of the time you get, you know, 3-5 year warranties and all the new stuff that's brand new in the granny. And you're getting this brand new product at the back. You've got depreciation on it. Plus you've got all this surplus cash flow. They're no brainers, man. They're great deals.
Can I ask you, some people might be thinking out there, so hold on, we're going to build something out the back. Am I able to still rent the front while the back's getting built? Yeah. They get a bit confused.
Yes, yes, yes.
So can you just run through, how does that work? Because surely someone's 100%. Renting the front, they're going, hold on,
yeah.
What the hell's going on at the back?
Yeah. How does that work? So like typically, like depending on the state, you can put it in the lease so the tenant's aware of it and they know what's going to happen. Most of the time when this happens on the upfront on that first lease, we'll just let them know, look, when that starts, you make them aware when you're going through the leasing process. And obviously, guys, it's going to be a little bit harder on that first lease to get someone that's understanding, but you're going to find someone that wants the house, especially if it's presenting well and you're not going for absolute top dollar rent. Remember, this is just on one lease. And then you get them in there. They know that when that thing starts getting rented out, you're going to give them $20 to $30 a week reduction during that period. Then once it's finished, the rent goes back up. And happy days, then you rent the back one out. That's the only time you ever really have an issue. But what I always like to do is I always like to build the color bond fence straight away. So if a lease is about to finish or about to start a build, I'll get the color bond fence up straight away. So then you're leasing it so they know that's their space. That's what they have to work with. There's no gray lines here. That's what you guys have got. Happy to sign off on it. Bang, beautiful. If you're going to be halfway through a lease and you can put it in the lease that it can be done, then you just let them know, by the way, when this is going to start, we'll put the fence up first so it's nice and separate. You know, you guys won't be having to be, you know, builders staring at you and you staring at them and all the rest of it. You're going to have your separation and it's going to be sweet. But, you know, like you're going to get a below market rent during this period because of what's going on. Guys, normally after 12 months, it's turned around. They're both rented. The fences are up. It's all good after that.
Yeah, no one knows anything.
But there's that point that you've just got to be. And that's why it's a manufactured cash flow deal. You're going to get a higher and average return. There's got to be a little bit of work. There's going to be a little bit of give and take that goes through all this as well.
A lot of the deals that we do, the yields on those back, so let's just say the granny, they're super strong, right? But we've seen some incredible growth in those rents.
Oh, 100%.
Just on their own.
Yeah.
Which has just made it now even astronomical.
Well, why don't we talk about, I know you've got a case study of a deal we did And the different strategies and different layers, you want to talk about it or not?
Well, this is the very first deal, actually,
okay,
you did for me when I first came to you. This was the very first deal. And let me say, at first, out of the first four deals we did, I believe this one was probably, it started out as the weakest one in terms of it, because there was some cracking deals, in terms of just the numbers, right? Probably, but then it actually has turned out to be the strongest one. And the reason being, because we layered the strategies, which is exactly what you're going on about. So let's go through it. And the first property was in Queensland, in Brisbane.
Yep.
We bought you bought the house for $285,000.
Yep.
Now, the area that you bought, good growth location, ticked all the boxes that we were looking at.
But funnily enough, countercyclically, everyone else was saying it was a shithole of an area.
Do not buy in
it
there.
It wasn't going to grow.
Why Brizzy, would you ever buy in there?
Yeah, Brizzy in general, most people were tallying up at the time saying it was average, it was going back. But it was in a nice little lull period for us to get you know, aggressive.
That's
in.
Right.
But this area in particular was definitely being talked down.
So then we spent $5,000, I remember, fixing up the kitchen upstairs.
Yeah, we did a little kitchen upgrade.
Right? It was that's a Queenslander, right. Typical Queenslander.
Yep, weatherboard high set.
That's right. So $285,000, we spent $5,000 on the reno. That place ended up renting for $350,000.
Yep.
Straight off. That was the first one out of the way.
Yep.
And then obviously we layered the strategy that you're talking about. We built a granny out the back.
Yep.
We spent, I believe, about $120,000 back then.
Yeah, yeah. We're pretty cheap when we could build them back then.
$120,000 back then. And that was rented for $320,000 at the time. Mm-hmm. So what were we looking at? Roughly
$670,000 a week.
Yep. $670,000 a week. So about an 8.5%.
Yep. On a low 400s total all in.
So you'd be pretty happy with that.
8.5% is pretty strong, man.
So that was pretty strong. And
well done.
Remember, thank
you. Who's your BA? Wow. Can I have his number?
Nah.
Australian Property Scout,
doesn't
guys.
Doesn't take calls.
Not from you.
Now, as I was saying to everyone,
yes,
this particular deal in terms of the numbers started out as one of my weakest one, which just goes to show you the power of these deals.
100%.
So after you bought me quite a few of these deals in the first year. We bought four of them.
Yep.
Then we went out to another market, bought a couple more.
Yep.
And then because I was looking at what are my next options, I went back to revisit this one.
We did the bread and butters.
We did.
In Perth, because I was telling you, we needed to start building in some exit strategy.
Which is what we spoke about, the 375 deal, right? So when we thought, what am I going to do now? And I thought, you know what? I want to go back and revisit this deal. There's some more juice in there and I wanted to improve my serviceability. So I went and did quite an extensive renovation on this particular house.
So we added bedrooms.
Yep.
We added bathroom.
That's right.
We added kitchens.
That's right.
We extended and we pretty much added all these different things into it with an existing sort of framework that we were able to utilize and work with.
Yes.
Which is something that I had done multiple times before, both within my portfolio and for other clients as well, but especially within my own portfolio. I've trialed and errored this strategy. And I said to Jimmy, mate, we've got this in the trigger, in the tank. And obviously, you'd done that deal for 410. I think you had it valued at like 550, 600 or something.
Yep.
Released the equity, went and did one deal with it, but then also came back and executed and finished the final layer of this strategy, right?
Which is the renovation. Yes, you're right. So that reno, I probably spent about $80,000 on that reno. Mm-hmm. And went from $350 a week rent. Hold your hat, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Now that property is rented for $685,000. So I remember when I told
doubled
you
your rent for $80,000.
I remember when I told you you couldn't believe it.
I didn't believe it.
You said, nah, low sixes, surely.
And we're going to have the property manager on that achieved that
result.
She's
a gun.
She's a weapon. She's a beast. She's in a league of her own.
She is.
Even still, like market rent for that is 600 plus. 685 was off its head.
Yep.
But even at 600K, when you've done the deal for 410, you've added $80,000 on for rent, you're at 490. Even at 600, plus the granny is up to what, 380 at the time?
The granny now has increased to 380.
Yeah. So even if you're saying at market rent, you're pretty well at a grand with an above average property manager, you're at nearly 1100. What's your yield?
It's over 11%.
11%. And how long ago did you buy it? 2 years ago.
Two and a half, maybe.
Yeah, two and a half. Late 2020. Yeah, that's when we got started.
So this is awesome.
So hang on a sec.
Hold your hat, folks.
Well, just think about those numbers for a sec, guys. $1,000 a week rent on a $490,000 all. It's $1,075, I think, total.
Yeah.
On $490,000 all in, the thing would be worth about $800,850 now, and an 11.3% yield. And when we first did the deal, we're running in the eights, right?
Yep.
But now we're at 11.3%. The reason I'm slowing down and explaining this is because so often you need to understand when you're in the right market and the market's rising, you're going to get price growth, you're going to get rental growth. Sometimes you've got to realize that you take a deal on that lower end of the merit, which 8% is still an exceptional return, but you take a deal on the lower end of that merit knowing full well when that market has its run, has its cycle. You know, if you left that, if you'd left that debt and not pulled that debt out at all, that thing's probably like 30 grand a year net passive, right? But like you pull, you know, you've obviously pulled debt out and all the rest of it, but you've finished the strategy, you've executed the strategy, you've got a ridiculously high yield on it. And obviously the rental growth has picked up as well. Obviously the renovation has added a huge amount to it as well. But even the rental growth side of things, like you first rented the granny for 320, now it's at 380. That house at 350 would probably be up around, you know, 420, 450 as it is as well. So you're going to have rental growth across the board. Even if you've done nothing else, you probably would be in the nines, but 9% yields. But the net cash flow of something at 11.3% that's cost you, you know, essentially that amount, the net cash flows on that are absolutely through the roof. Like, we should run the exact numbers of what they
sometimes
are.
Sometimes I don't like saying this because I think it gives people an unrealistic perspective. And the only reason why I say is that when you do the deal first.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's why I'm taking it back.
So that's why when you do the deal first, you've got to be exposed in a market to get the benefits down the track. Yeah. So you've got to be prepared to get 670 a week rent, knowing that there's more strategies you can deploy.
Yep.
To then get the uplift down the track.
100%.
So that's why when I explain this to people, if I have a call with them and I say, look, don't get too caught up with those numbers.
Yep.
I don't want you to think.
Yeah.
You got to.
Because you can't get today's numbers. Like you can't go back today and pay and buy what Jimmy did for that money then and expect today's numbers because that's unrealistic you got on the right market, right time. You rode a huge wave of growth and now you're paying the dividends of it. But it's the equivalent of trusting me and the APS team to go and put you in a different market that's primed for a similar level of growth and rental growth, and that we're, you know, if we do 8% yields now, that they probably are going to be 10% plus in the next couple of years. The next, you know, could be 2-3, could be 5 years, but like you're gonna win and you're gonna have those wins and carry that through as well.
And can just on this particular deal, and again, just without laboring the point, if we were to pay down the debt on this 500 grand,
yes.
You'd love to. Why wouldn't you want to have a thousand? Now people can see why. Dude, you would replace your income,
even if you
with
had
these deals,
$10,000 to $15,000 worth of running costs on that deal. Because if you're at say $1,100 a week, you're running at probably $57,000 per annum of total cash flow.
Yeah.
Even if that deal cost you, you know, well, 12 grand a year to own it, if it was debt free, which it wouldn't cost that much.
Yeah.
Let's say it did, you're sitting at 45 grand. Per annum net.
How many of these would you need to have a comfortable life?
If two of them, you got pretty well 100 grand, like just under 100 grand.
So this is the power of having these kind of properties in your portfolio.
Yes. And guys, this is also why, like, people talk about all these other things that have really high net yields and all the rest of it. Like, when you layer residential strategies on top of each other and you play with them like this and you manipulate it like this is where you can really build an exceptional, like, base portfolio of these deals in the residential sector. And there is so much power in this because, like, you look at Jimmy, there's been huge rental growth. His tenants move out. He hasn't got 6-12 months of vacancy. You know, someone's in there again the next week. You know, that's how quick the turnover is in these sorts of areas. And if they're not in within a week or two, you drop the rent by $20, someone will jump on it straight away because it's that lower price point compared to the market. You lease it straight away. Building that base level of cash flow out in the residential sector, guys, I cannot stress it enough. It is so important to that long-term stability of your position.
Low stress.
Low stress, man.
And when you have properties like this, even with interest rates going up, you sleep pretty comfortably at night.
Yeah.
And that's why for a lot of our clients are in similar situations like this. And people out there, you can do it. I know it's hard. Some people might be listening to this going, these guys are full of it. There is no way we are doing this. I mean, I know you've got quite a few of those kind of deals.
I laugh because people have hit me up before or just like commented on like old stories. Oh, it'll be funny when interest rates go up by 5%, 6%, he's going to be stuffed. I laugh. I've got like almost 20 of these deals in the portfolio plus everything else that I've got. It's just like, I'm sweet, man. Plus a low LVR. So yeah, no worries. Like all good.
Yeah.
Because I've built it out with the right properties.
That's right.
So, all right. See, I sleep very well.
Mate, absolutely nailed that. So that's number four, was it?
That's number four.
Yep.
Mate, number five, commercial. So we're swapping over to a commercial sector and a commercial space and a topic on this. Now, man, I love commercial when commercial is good, okay? But I've left commercial to the end for a very specific reason. Do you know what that is?
You shouldn't do it too early, Sammy boy. Is that why you've left it to the end?
Level four investor. You leveled up, son. Well done. 3,000
Daniel, son.
That's exactly it. Okay. I left commercial to the end because realistically, when you are building a portfolio, you should be leaving commercial to the end. Commercial, there's a reason why you need a higher LVR for commercial. It's a higher risk product. If you had 100% of your cash flow built out in commercial and the economy went through a bit of a rough patch, I would be struggling to sleep. You know, but if you've got 2/3 or 3/4 of your portfolio cash flow what you need to live and survive and be able to live your life, your what you're happy to do, your base lifestyle, if you build that out in resi, you will always be able to sleep well at night. Because worst thing that happens is, you know, oh, someone trashes a place, bang, insurance covers it, right? Or let's say a tenant moves out and you have a week or two of vacancy, I'm going to drop the rent by 20, 30 bucks a week, I'll fill it straight away. You have that in commercial and the economy's shit.
Businesses go bust.
Man, they go bust. You look at COVID, you look at the amount of people that, all these bulletproof, you know, style investments, warehouses and all the rest of it in these different sectors. Man, the amount of people that I knew that were had tenants stuck in there that had no money coming in because of COVID, couldn't pay the bill, couldn't get them out.
So what if people said to you, well, hold on a minute. What about if it's the right commercial property? I get what you're saying. Might be some retail commercial that they're exposed, but some people out there might be saying and arguing in their head.
Yep.
If you had a cracking commercial deal, you should be okay.
Beautiful. Put it in at the end.
Okay.
Easy. Put it in at the end.
And is it fair to say that a cracking commercial deal isn't going to be too cheap either? You're going to be paying 100% decent amount of money, which most people can't.
The simple fact as well, though, is like people are like, oh, but you have purpose-built ones and it's all good and you might have an 8-10 year lease or something, 5 years. You know, you have this huge lease. For one, if you're getting something with an 8-10 year lease, you're going to be copying a lower yield on it and you're going to be paying a premium because there's got something solid in there within that, right? But also, you know, if that person moves on, it's a very specific purpose to that building, right? Then it's not that easy to replace straight away. So you might have a good 5 years. You might. You might be lucky and have a good 5 years on it. What happens if they move on at the end of the 5 years? You know, it can take time. And that's why, like, man, there is some security to it. And if you can get a great deal on that side, I think it's great to have in the portfolio. But man, for me, for sleep at night factor, which I know most people are wanting to build, they're not wanting to build ridiculous portfolios. They want to replace their incomes to be able to live comfortably. Mm. That's what I call what I would build out in a base as to what I would love, what I would build out resi to support.
Yep.
And then the surplus, like the ultimate lifestyle on top of it, I would build it out in commercial.
Okay.
So if times get tough, you can trim that. You can have it. You can have 6 months a year. You've retired at 40, but you know what? Your commercial just went empty and it's going to be it's vacant for the next 6 months. You know, let's say it takes 6 months to get leased. It's vacant for the next 6 months. Okay, I'm just not going to do my you know, I'm not going to travel around the world for this little bit because it's vacant. Bang, gets leased. Here we go. I got the cash flow in. I'm off. Okay. You know, but if that was 100% commercial and that sort of thing, and you were highly leveraged into, or not highly leveraged, but let's say I had a couple of these, like that could be a very worrying time. If that's paying off your mortgage, you know, or your kids are in private school or all these different things, that's exposure, you know, that I don't think you're as exposed to in the residential sector. There's a very simple way to actually describe this and to this should really hit home when I say this. If commercial is so low risk, why do the banks demand a higher LVR?
Ooh.
But it's a legitimate question.
You are right.
And it's like banks.
Because they see businesses as risky in the sense. I mean, 100%. Everyone needs to live somewhere.
There is risk in it.
So, of course.
But they are a great asset. Man, I'm invested in commercial. Mm. It's coming into the business at some point later in this year. We've already done a soft start.
Hold your hat there, ladies and gentlemen.
It's coming in. We've been doing it for a while, but we're doing it low key. It's coming in later in the year, but it's not for everyone. People come to me if they're not at the right point in their portfolios, even though we offered it as a service. Mm. I'm not going to be telling people to do it unless it's the right point in their portfolios. The other huge thing, Jimmy, is like, man, if you go and dump all your cash into a commercial deal, like now, let's say you do two or three bread and butters. Even say, I'll keep using him as a case example, right? But young Liam Montgomery, he's done his three deals. He's taken a step back. If he went and dumped all those profits into commercial, great, man. Well done, right? But now you're stuck. You stopped. You have to wait for something else to happen. You probably have to sell something else. Like your journey's stuck for a while. He did it too early if he'd done it then. But instead, if he rolls it into resi, keeps recycling capital out, jumping, moving, all the rest of it, he can keep moving, keep building the portfolio.
Yes.
When people do it too early, I've had guys reach out to me. They go, man, fuck, I made a mistake. I bought commercial. I had 150K to play with and I put it in commercial. I've only just been able to save up enough and pull a little bit out of it or the surplus cash flows come in and they're coming back to me 2 years later. And so they've done well out of the commercial deal, but like what they could have built in the resi space instead in that time frame, the opportunity cost that is lost and missed there is crazy. So I think it's really, really important to note, guys, it is a great asset. Like when it's good, it's great, right? But when it's bad, it can be really bad. So you've got to be careful with this and it's got to come in at the right point in your portfolio. And that's at the back end. That's why we've left it to the end. It's at the back end of your portfolio.
Okay.
Build out and create a strategy around resi replacing everything that you want, right? Sorry, everything that you need to be able to live a great lifestyle and not be stressed in it. That's what you want to build out in resi because it's dependable. You know, low you're going to get it low risk. And then the surplus, that's what I'd be building out from a commercial side because it is good. When it's good, it's great.
Okay. The king of resi has given his commercial endorsement. There you go. No, that was makes sense. I mean, it makes so much sense. A lot of people love commercial because they, oh, I don't want to deal with all the hassles. The tenant pays everything and all that.
You have a few hassles if she's vacant. Yeah. You have a few grey hassles. I think have you owned a few commercials in your time?
I think I have.
In another life.
I'm the king of the commercial. was that it? Is that the top five? Have you got a few little extra...
You're reading my show notes, mate, aren't you? I got a couple little dot points here. I've got a couple of like additionals that we won't run through, but we're just going to go high level.
Just
mention
them.
You got your things like your boarding houses and your rooming houses. We've executed them over the years. They're a lot of hassle. People charge ridiculously high management rates and everything to do them. They're okay.
The juice is not worth the squeeze.
Unit blocks and granny flats are a better strategy, guys. Yeah. Like, guarantee you. People will throw numbers on it that they promised you and all the rest of it. It's not as good as you think it is.
And they're custom built too, and you got to be...
commercial funding as well. Yeah, so I just go off and do a commercial deal, you know, if you're going to do that. Yeah. I'd strike it through. I wouldn't worry about doing it. Airbnb, I think, and short-term rentals. It can be a great strategy if you're a hands-on investor. Maybe if you've got something and you live near a coastal center or something and you can do really, really well out of it, but you're going to have to be super hands-on with it. It's not a scalable strategy from a buy and hold and Airbnb perspective because the banks don't like them. They don't recognize them, do they, really? They do, but at a much lower. So they'll shave you. So like you say you got a couple of deals here, they'll shave you to 80-90%. A lot of the time with the Airbnb, they'll shave you like 30-50%. They'll smash you. Your serviceability will be shit. So I'm not a big fan of it from that perspective. If you want to be super hands-on and kind of build it in that regard, then it is something that is out there. And I've known of some people that have actually done quite well out of it, but they're hands-on.
But don't do it if it's going to be to the detriment of you accumulating your portfolio.
Yeah,
I know some people try and do this too soon as well. And then they realize
and
they
people
can't
buy it. There's a place I really want to live, like as a holiday home, and then I'll live in it down the track, but I'll Airbnb it for now. Man, like especially if you're at the start of your portfolio, you're way too early. Like stop thinking like a baller at the back end of their portfolio, you know.
Because your serviceability is going to be shot.
100%. You kill yourself. So, So they're little side strategies and there's a couple of others, guys, but like stick to your stuff. So to recap on the ones that I would really stick to and build out when it is the right time, you've got your duplexes, both existing and new builds. But if we're talking cash flow, we're talking existing duplexes, buying the right market at the right price. You've got your unit blocks with multiple different layers and strategies within that and on top of that as well. You're renovating for yield, which can be exceptional. Different little, you know, bathroom, bedroom additions, all the rest of it, all the good stuff. You've got your secondary dwellings and granny flats can be an exceptional strategy if you know how to do it and you're buying in the right market, getting discounts, building for the right price, layering different things on top, like combining it with the renovating for yield as well can be a super, super powerful strategy to get both cash flow and to get exceptional growth. And then your final one being commercial. But I think they're great. And like I said, guys, commercial at the end because it should be going in at the end of your portfolio.
Gee, mate, you really nailed it today. You must have had your Weet-Bix.
A little bit of energy.
Yeah, you do.
I haven't even had a coffee.
Yeah, you absolutely nailed that. you've heard it from the cash flow king. People have called him the cash flow king.
Well, I've copped that before.
He has. He doesn't like it very much because it G's him up a little bit. But because they think he only does cash flow deals.
That's true. I have been known before. Yeah, actually, all right, you're right. You only do the cash flow. It's like majority of what you do is bloody bread and butters. That's where you should be building your goose.
So but that was awesome. And I think now that we've done the bread and butter deals,
yes,
and now today we've done the manufacturer cash flow deals, are we going to piece them all together and find out how they actually work in Sammy Boy?
I wasn't going to. Do you think we should?
Not today, but I think we should.
Yes, we are. We definitely are. So it's coming soon, guys. Mate, this is a Jimmy Ibrahim coined term, mate. What do you call it?
The dual asset accumulation.
Are you questioning?
Well, yes. I wasn't sure if you're asking me. Did I come up with that? Okay, I did.
No, you definitely
did. I did.
You haven't got that
no,
much.
No, I didn't. I definitely didn't come up with that.
But yeah, guys, we're gonna in an upcoming episode, it might even be next week, guys, we're going to be talking through a strategy, especially around different terms and different sort of target points that people predominantly always come to us wanting to hit within their portfolio. we're going to tie in a bit of a strategy session in terms of how we would hit this with these two different deal types, the sort of deals that we would put in the portfolio, the way that we would accumulate. And we might run through some different scenarios. So we'll run through as an overview of the properties that you would need to hit that. And then we'll also run through some different scenarios with some different starting points and how I would hit it if I was starting in with maybe three different scenarios as well. So tune in, guys. That's coming in soon in terms of how you would plug these manufactured cash flow deals into the portfolio.
Because what property you buy at each point is so important. Man. And we hear it all the time that people just buy the wrong deal. So don't worry about where you're buying. If you don't know if you should be buying a bread and butter or a manufactured cash flow deal, then stop. Because it's gonna hamper your ability to continue.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to discuss on the next one of the next episodes.
Right? 100%. That's it, man.
All right. But well Jimmy, done, Sammy boy.
Thank you, mate. What a wrap.
Can I go home now?
No. Yes, mate. We're going to scoot you off to the airport right now, buddy. But, mate, thank you for your examples there, mate. A couple of case studies from your own portfolio, what you've hit.
Well, thank you.
Mate, no worries at all.
You're on the boredom.
It's an absolute pleasure sourcing them for you and executing on these strategies for you as well. You know I take a lot of pride and pleasure out of knocking these sorts of deals over. Man, thank you very much for allowing us to use a few of your deals as case studies. Guys, thank you very much for listening in today. As always, it's an absolute pleasure having you guys on the show. If you haven't subscribed yet on your favorite platform, please subscribe and get amongst that. If you haven't left a 5-star testimonial yet, please jump on. We love the testimonials. We love the reviews. We get great joy out of reading them. If you've got any questions that you've got, hit the show notes section and there is the team email of what you can email in and ask any questions you've got for future episodes as well. And as a final note, guys, if you've taken value out of this episode, you might know someone that is in a very equity rich or cash rich position. They might have a lot of equity in their own home. Could be your parents. It could be a business owner or someone that you know, or it could be someone that's just built a nice little base portfolio and it's time to level up to the next phase of deals. Make sure you send them this podcast so they can listen to it. They can start to learn in the same way that you're learning and you're continuing to build your circle of influence and the knowledge that they have so they can help lift you up as well and that you can grow. You can also send them the link to www.australianpropertyscout.com.au. You can book in a disco call with the dancing Zohan master himself, Mr. Jimmy Ibrahim. But anyway, guys, until next week, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. I hope you've enjoyed the Manufactured Cashflow Deals episode. This is the Scouting Australia podcast. Signing off. Any last words, Jimmy?
No, mate, you nailed it. Let's sign off.
Until next week, buddy.
Until next week.
Take care, guys.